What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 25 of the Tucson Pinball Podcast. I recently sat down with a local player and we discussed our trip to Pinburg. It's a little bit of a lengthier interview, so I'm going to split it up into a few segments for you. But we discussed all the various rounds, anything else we wanted to talk about, the trip in general, and we run some numbers and look for ways to improve for future performances. So here we go. So joining us today on the podcast is Ben Clement. Ben brought home a little bit of hardware, and that's probably a little bit of a spoiler alert, but it was a very fun trip to Pinburg. There was a very large Arizona contingent. The numbers were up from Tucson and from Phoenix compared to last year, and I think there were more people in finals compared to last year as well. So Ben, welcome.
Thank you.
I told a going into expectation last year for me, only hearing stories, and then I had kind of a recap saying, this is what my impressions were of the event. So I'm sure you researched and you read up, because obviously you had to make the decision to go out to this event. So going into this, what were kind of your expectations both on the event and how you hope to do and maybe compete?
So I knew I was going to go to the event, and I expected the machines to be set up pretty hard, expected, you know, all the best players from around the country and I guess throughout the rest of the world to kind of be there, because it's the biggest tournament in pinball. And I kind of thought, based on my performance in some of the other large tournaments like Indisc and TPF, that I was maybe, you know, if I had a good day, I'd be in that bottom of A, top of B type of range. So not having done it before, I thought that seems like a pretty good target. Like it seems like it's achievable if I do well, but if it turns out that the whole thing is just a lot harder than I expected, then, you know, I wouldn't mind being lower, but I thought like low A, high B was a reasonable expectation.
Right. Going well, and you had a lot of success at Indisc and TPF this year, and you went out to Bat City, and, you know, you've done very well in the larger events that you've gone to. And so, you know, you have to go to Pinburg just to say, you know, this is where I stand on things, and to get a good gauge. But I have to say, compared to last year, this year's Pinburg was a little bit more top heavy. Like I was throughout the event, I was looking at the names that were categorized into the various divisions, and it's like, wait a second, these guys were all in A division last year, or these guys were all in B and now they're in C, you know, or whatever. So
yeah,
I've
listened to a fair number of podcasts that have talked about Pinburg, and a lot of people seem to be surprised with the quality of the play throughout the entire group of entrants. And it's like there are very few, you know, new players to pinball that participate in Pinburg.
Yeah, and I think you can just look at the time it takes to sell out the event. I think you know that that's going to have some sort of a factor on, you know, how you gauge I don't even know the proper way to phrase this, but the faster it sells out, the more intense the player base is going to be, because you're not going to have a casual person logging on and within 18 minutes or whatever it was, you know, snagging a spot. They're not going to hear about it for a few weeks probably. And by that point, they're going to be deep on the wait list, which fortunately the wait list got sifted through fairly quickly. I know compared to last year, they made a pretty proactive effort to try to weed out the people that were, you know, kind of on the fence and maybe more of a no than a yes to kind of push through that wait list and get the serious commits an actual spot.
Yeah, and I think despite how quickly it sold out, I thought I heard there were still several entrants who had Pinburg this year as their first IFPA event.
I don't know that I heard about that. I guess I could go through the IFPA listing and just look at all the gray names and be like, oh, okay, and just kind of do a count. But I hadn't even thought about that, because I'm trying to remember. I don't know if they did that last year or not. I don't. because I was looking at last year's stuff just to kind of collect some numbers, and I saw some names, and there was one person that was in one of my groups, and she had mentioned how she just like kind of found out about this, and I remembered that name looking through some of my groupings, and I was like, oh, okay, let's see how new to this she actually was. And it was literally her first event. But I don't think she was grayed out on the listing. Yeah. I think they started at the beginning of this year.
Well, and you know, it seems like competitive pinball has been growing so quickly. I can see how someone who may have just gotten into the sport in the last year has really gotten into the sport in the last year and heard how great a tournament this is and just decided to go.
Yeah, and that's just... It's really cool to be able to be a part of that and to meet new people, because it's, I know they're out there, but it's hard to meet somebody who is not a fun person to play with. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
It tends to attract people that you want to be around within the activity. So all right. So on my last podcast, when I was talking about what to bring and everything, and I'm adding something to the list for next year, bring some binoculars. Because as funny as that sounds, I went to go sit down a few times,
yeah,
and I could peek over the shoulder of somebody, but they're 30, 40 feet away. And I'm just like, you know what? I'd like to be able to see this at 5x zoom right now so I could actually see if I'm still winning or if I'm, you know, how far of a hole I have to make up. So, yeah, next year I'm bringing some sort of small binocular, just because I'm already bringing a backpack, and I think I can count at least four times when they would have come in useful this last time around. So I'm bringing binoculars next year.
Yep, that's a pretty good addition to the list.
So, but last time I also mentioned that I'm planning to come in, I think it was 37th, in order to get the 15 points I need to crack the top 1,000.
How'd that go?
A little bit of room to make up. Maybe next year.
Yeah.
So, but all in all, I think I did a little better than I was expecting or hoped for. I wanted to obviously do the best I could. I wasn't going to kind of half it in any aspect, just because, you know, you're there to do what you can and see where you come out. But I think I my day one made my day two a little bit more challenging than it probably could have been.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'd say that's true for you.
So one of the very cool things about the way the Pinburg format is set up is that your very first round, it's split as far as like your quarterlies of where you're ranked. So for me, I think I was the third quarterly kind of person in my group.
Mm-hmm.
And so last year I had Sanjay Shah in my group, and he was my A division player within my group. And I pulled off an 8 to win the group. And this year I had Nick Zendejas in my first round, and I pulled out a 9 and I won that group. So my round ones are going well, which feed into round two, which we can kind of get to. But let's talk about the various rounds and if anything stood out or if anything, you know, mentionable was going on, or you know, whatever, just kind of a nice recap. So in your round one, do you remember who your top-level player was?
My top-level player in round one was Zoe Vrabel.
Oh, from, nice.
Yeah. I was like, hey, I recognize your voice.
Yes, and and I think we were playing nearby. I think we might have been back-to-back. And I didn't even know you were playing in that group, but I heard her voice, and so I started looking around for Zoe, and then I was like, hey, Ben's right there.
Yeah.
And then,
I'm looking at my score sheet. She was seated number 111 going into the event. So she was our top seed for my group. Cool. I was second at 290, and then we had someone from the 500s and from the 700s.
So we started on
Harlem Globetrotters, and I thought, great. This is a game I know. This is a game I'm pretty good at. This is a really good place to start. And I took 1 point. and that was a theme I've noticed as I was reviewing all of my sheets. A lot of games that I know really well, I did really poorly on.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where it's like, do you walk up to it being too loose because you're like, okay, there's four games in this bank. I know this game. This is going to be my three-point machine for sure. And then, you know, you just kind of too, not to say this was you personally, but like, I know that I've probably done this more than once, but like, I'm not like super too sure of myself, but I may be a little bit too relaxed and too off guard. And it's like, you have to play, like you mentioned earlier, you know, you go into Pinburg thinking these are the most challenging setup machines on the planet. And you have to play a little bit defensively. You know, if you're not on your game and if you're not paying attention and playing defense, your ball's over. So
yeah, it can be over real fast. And I look at some of these and, you know, you start to think about what it would have taken to get to, you know, just a couple more points. So, I only took 1 point on Harlem Globetrotters, but I was, you know, 50,000 points from winning the game. So, you know, that's a handful of good spinner hits or a couple, you know, inline drops or something like that. You can have a bad game and win. You can have a bad game and be really close. It just kind of, it feels like it's kind of luck of the draw sometimes, but you win some of those and you lose some of those for sure.
Yeah, very much so. And then there's also times where you can have maybe your best game ever and still end up with 0 points because everybody had their best game ever.
Yeah, or your best game ever just isn't that good.
Well, don't tell anyone that.
Yeah.
So in one of my groups, we played Revenge from Mars, and I think I've played that maybe 2 times prior to this. And I was just like, my biggest issue going into a game that I'm not familiar with is I don't really have much of a benchmark. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. It's like, you know, what do I expect typical players to put up so that I know what to shoot for, so that I know if maybe they're struggling or if I'm overshooting somehow or whatever, you know, like I can maybe take a little bit of the risk off and kind of go a little bit more for chopping wood and do safe stuff or whatever. But yeah, walking up to a game that you know and then doing bad and then stepping over one machine to a game you've never played and then coming up with 3 points, like the psychology of what goes on in Pinburg is you just shouldn't even try. You just don't even try to analyze it. Just go play and have fun.
Play your best every ball.
Yeah. So you had volley in that group as well, right?
I did have volley. I played volley once in the warm-up just because it was pretty close to the entrance. And it ended up being in my group. And that was a really fun game. I enjoyed that one quite a bit. So that was the EM for our group.
Yeah,
I did fairly well on that. I took so close. I ended up with about 50,000 points, and I was 50 points shy of the person who won.
Nice.
So that's you know, that's a couple pop bumper hits on a game like that.
Yeah, I played that. I intended to play it one time in warmups, and then I said, no, let's try that one again. And then the second time, I kind of got a little bit of a hang of it, and I'm like, I kind of like this game. Now I know why, because I'd heard the name, but I'd never even seen it. I've never seen pictures of it, but people talk about it from time to time, and it's like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah, I had heard it mentioned you know, a couple weeks before Pinburg on one of the other podcasts. And when I saw it, I thought, well, someone else likes this game, so I should at least go try it. And it was a really fun game.
Yeah, well, and like Doodlebug was kind of the darling of last year, and this year I was actually able to play an old Chicago, and I'm on board. Whatever people say about it, it has it. You know what I mean? And like there's games that are fun to play, and you're just like, okay, I'm satisfied playing that game. And then there's games that you just can't stop. And after, I think after the second day, Will and myself and his buddy, is it Aaron? I think, the three of us were kind of walking around playing games, and I was like, I've never played this game. Let's play it. And they were just like, and Will, of course, you know, has tons of experience on it. He's like, well, you kind of want to do this and this, and don't shoot at that because that's death. And then I saw the flipper configuration, which, are you familiar with that?
I'm trying to remember it. So what I remember about Old Chicago is that I played it once after the tournament was over, and I was not too thrilled with it. So I might not have connected with it in quite the way that you did.
So it's super short ball times, but when you're playing with a group, that's where the joy comes from, because the in lanes, there are no in lanes, there are no slingshots, there's pop bumpers, and then there's just a straight feed as the out lane on either side. So so if you trap up, you have like 1 inch that goes straight up, and like you're not rolling the ball up anything, like you're literally just trapping it into a corner.
Yeah.
But what I don't even know what made me try to do this, because I knew what the result was going to be, but I still did it anyways. And I drained out the right side, and it was about 3/4 away down the out lane. And then I made up my mind before this, obviously, to actually get started on the motion, but I was just like, this ball is not going down. It is going up. And so I started shaking the machine, and I actually moonwalked the ball from pretty much the bottom of that out lane all the way up. And then I bounced it over like we all do on Future Spa with no tilt. And for whatever reason, I hit the right flipper button expecting it to work, which it did not. And I looked up on the back glass, and of course it says tilt. But I'm just like, that was so much fun. I don't really care what happened, because it was really fun. So,
yeah.
All right. So how many points did you end up with in round one?
I ended up getting seven points in that round, which I felt like anything above six is a win.
Yeah, absolutely. I was listening to, when this Flippin' podcast was interviewing Colin McAlpine, he's basically saying, if you get sevens in every round, you're going to be in the top of A. And it's just like, really? You know, but that's the reality. And if you get sixes in every round, you're going to be like bottom A, top of B. And that's like, that's, goes back to how tight the groupings are. Last year, all of B division was 3 points. And this year, like, the spread between the bottom of A and the top of D, I think, was all of 5 points. So B and C division was a 5-point difference, which it's so crazy. But I mean, that's just the caliber of players that are there. But it also goes to show you that you can bomb certain rounds and still do well later, and you can kind of average it out, which we saw Jeff do that.
For sure.
So I have one interesting story from round one. We played Card Wiz. That was our first game.
Yes.
And you know that it's a two-player EM. And so I, because of the way everything was paired up, I was going to be second player on the first game, you know, the first set that took place. And so the first player played their ball, and then, you know, you just kind of stand off and everything, but then she goes to plunge the next ball, and she's not a beginner or anything like that. I've seen her, actually, I saw her at Texas, and her husband's really good, and she knows what she's doing as well. And, but she was thinking, and she was so apologetic after this, but she said she was thinking that it was a single player EM, and she's like, I don't even know why I thought it wasn't a two player, even though I was staring at it right before. So anyway, so she plunged my ball, and she realized what she did when it got to like the upper portion of the arch. And there's a little bit of a skill shot in there, but I don't know this game well enough to be like, oh my God, that's not where I would have put it type of thing. And she's, like, she kind of backed away, and she's like, oh, no, no. And I'm just like, it's fine, I'll take it. And so basically my first ball was plunged, but I got it at the top of the arch in a skill shot I would have screwed up anyways. And so we played on from there. She ended up, I think she took a zero or got a one on that. But this happened last year where somebody it's not that they plunged out of turn. They didn't play at a turn. Like, they plunged, and then they instantly realized what they had done. And then, like, everybody in the group, like, the person whose turn it was, they stepped up, and they're like, no, it's cool. And, like, after that ball was over, again, it was a lady, but that it doesn't matter. I've seen guys do it, you know, more often than not. And but like last year, she was just like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I'll take the zero or whatever. And we're all just like, everybody looked at each other and was just shaking their heads. It's like, no, it's fine, you know. So yes, the rules are there, and in a a hyper competitive situation, you can use them, but it also just goes to show that there are players that they will make a mistake, and it's not the end of the world because nobody was really affected, because I ended up getting a 3 on that game anyways, which I wasn't expecting because I don't know anything about that game.
and it certainly, I mean, whether or not you want the person to take the 0 depends on the game too, because if you, as the player that was wronged, is going to probably get a consolation ball, which is going to be ball 1 on a new game. You know, on an EM, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, you're
but,
starting from
you know,
scratch.
If you were playing like a DMD game where you might have been building significant progress, and now you have to start all over at ball 1, you've definitely lost a lot.
Right. But if it's a DMD that everything is just, you start a new game and everything's lit, I might sit there and go, yeah, I'll take another ball.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Take another swing at all these things that are already set up and ready to go. So, yeah, that 9-point round 1 was the most I got out of that day. Which,
yeah.
The rest of the day wasn't too bad, but that was...
It's a good start.
I don't know what it is about round 1s, but I kind of enjoy them. It's just kind of... I think everybody's a little tense, and I don't know. It's not that I relax any faster than anybody else, but I don't know. Either way. So round 2, I knew I had overshot. That's the thing. In round 1, I knew I had overshot, and so I knew round 2 was not going to be good. And so I get over there, and I see the names on the list, and I don't recognize any of the names, but I'm looking at the numbers next to their name, and I'm just like, hey, these guys are all way better than me. And so so I get over there, and I'm talking to one of the guys, and he's just super cool. Like, everybody, that's the thing, is everybody's just, like, nice and mellow, most everybody. Some guys are just intense, and that's the way they are, and that's fine. But one of the guys was just super mellow, and I said, yeah, my last round, I think I overshot a little bit. And he's like, so this is going to be kind of like your humble round, right? And I was just like, it hit me so hard that I'm like, that is the most perfect explanation that I've ever heard about, you know, when you overshoot and all of a sudden you're with players that you may not belong with. And so I really appreciated the way that was phrased, because it wasn't insulting to them, or it didn't put them on a pedestal or anything, but he's just like, yeah, we all have, you know, it happens to everybody, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
And so that just kind of stuck with me, and that really put me at ease. So that was you know, but we looked at the chart, and everybody's round 2 was a little bit more advanced than their round 1, so that was cool.
Yeah. I was the last seed in my round 2, so I had some much higher ranked players in my group than me. So I think, let me see. I went into round 2 seeded 247th, and the top seed was a 54.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, you did quite well. But round 2, I had never played 3 of the 4 games.
Isn't that fun?
In my group. Yeah. So one of them was Wizard. And I have the Bob Matthews EM Cyclopedia to thank for my success on that, because he goes into great detail on exactly what you need to do to have a good game of Wizard, and explained what all the little flags that flap over mean, and that was great. I would have had no idea what to do in that game based on just the instruction sheet. And
yeah,
and that happened to be a game that I won in that group.
I played that at ZapCon last year, I think, and I don't think the flippers were functioning as properly as they should, because you couldn't get the ball into the upper areas. And from what I remember on that game, you basically have to get it most of the way up in order to get it around into that flag lane.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have too much experience on there, but I... You know, I hear good things about Wizard, but I know nothing about it.
Yeah. And I played Banzai Run in that group, which I was actually supposed to play in my first group, and then the Banzai Run that was over there broke. And then in group 2, I was supposed to be on Dr. Dude, and it broke, and they sent us over to Banzai Run in the backup group. So I got to play that, which I had never played before. And then I played Power Play, which I had played before plenty of times. They have one up at Tilt in Tempe. And that's a game I like, that early Bally era. And I did really well on that one. I won that game, lots of saucer hits, without me doing any work. So that was nice. And then finished up with Legends of WrestleMania, which I had actually never played before. Oh, so it was just I spent all the time in between balls trying to read pin tips and figure out what I was supposed to do, and a couple other documents that I had found links to somewhere on what to do, and I still have really no idea what I did there.
Yeah. Derek and I played Legends of WrestleMania at Arcade Expo last year, so last year's Indisc, and it was still early code, but we really didn't know what we were doing necessarily, but that was prior to one of their latest or later releases where you couldn't just shoot the ring all day, because that's kind of what I'd read, and it's like, you know, mm-hmm. once I confirmed that that's, you know, how to play the game basically, and it's like, oh, okay, just keep it up top all day. It's a modern EM, you know, in some situations. But yeah, outside of that, and then I saw it at New York up in Vegas, maybe the end of 2016, I think. And it was in that lineup of 10 machines. They've got like 10 new Sterns at New York, and I didn't even bother playing it. I was playing other games that I'd never played before, and I was just like, yeah, okay, I still know what the code basically wants you to do, so I'm not really gonna do it on this one. So,
mm-hmm.
But in my round two, I played the hardest Theater of Magic ever.
Mm.
And it was like, it was destroying everybody. Only two of us got into multi-ball, and I think I took a second on that machine. I'm trying to remember, but
remember what it was about that made it so difficult?
No, and that's the problem. We were all standing around like, why is this game so freaking hard?
Yeah.
So the one at D&D, when you plunge, it'll like it stops at that, like kind of the ramp that it's on, and just kind of mm-hmm. falls into the hole, right? Well, this one has probably been played more than the one at D&D, or something's bent or something, because when you plunge, like it would just kind of continue to go up that wire form even after it's passed through the hole. Like,
oh. And
when I first like, not that that has anything to do with anything, but like when I first plunged, I was just like, wait, that's different. And then my brain is like, focus. But I don't know. Like, is it the difference between the angle of the game at D&D compared to the one mm-hmm. at Pinburg? I mean, because, yes, everything is jacked up to the max at Pinburg. But that game, you know, that's a fun, flowy game. Like, that's a fairly safe game, you know? But people were dying left and right. So was it the hardest one ever? Yes, from a qualitative standpoint, yes. From a quantitative standpoint, I have no idea why it's hard, but it was, and everybody agreed that it was really hard. So
what were the scores like on that game?
Oh my goodness. I think 400 won it.
Wow.
And like, yeah, and I think I came in second with about 200 or something like that. Like it was just ridiculously low, and the other two guys didn't even break 100. It was,
wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing. So
I don't want to play that one ever again. I'll play the one at D&D. I'll take 1.5 all day, every day, you know.
Yeah.
And just kind of be happy with that. So round three was interesting for me. I played, I think, all new games to me. Well, that's not entirely true. I had played The Shadow once at one of Bruce's events up in Phoenix a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where I played him in the... Yeah, in the finals, I played Bruce, and it's at his house, and so he slaughtered me, but I came in second place, but I had no point in even going up to the game. I should have just plunged the balls. So I got a chance to watch everybody do way better than me at Pinburg on Shadow, and that's kind of it. And then, everybody's favorite motor show. I think we had one of these at ZapCon recently. And it's one that it's out of Spain or France or something like that. And it's just built like a tank. It's super heavy. And it's got those goofy, like, you know, those second flipper buttons on the Pin 2K machines that are kind of like.
Yeah.
Well, that's the main flipper button on Motor Show. And it's just so weird because it's not like a kind of a light press of the buttons to actuate the flippers. It's just they're heavy flipper buttons, and it's a heavy machine, and it's just, there's not much going on. Just shoot the shots. Basically, I watched the first two balls and assessed what everybody's plan was, and it was basically just to stay alive. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to shoot this one shot because it's safe and it seems to be giving decent points, and that's how I got a 3 on that game, and everything else sucked. Oh, and I broke Ali. We were supposed to play a Stern Ali. Oh,
good.
And there's 3 holes in the top right part of your skill shot, and it can like bounce off of 2 pegs that are in between the 3 holes. Like it'll bounce off of that and go back up into one of the holes. And one of those switches, because of the way the Stern switch is designed, like it got the plastic switch portion got stuck lower than what actually activated the switch. And so it just sat there and kicked and awarded 5,000 points, 5,000 points, 5,000 points. And I was just like, and I had the ball trapped up and I'm like, I don't even know what I do. Do I drain it? Like, this game is obviously FUBAR. You know, we're not going to continue to play this game. But one of the other guys was like, no, hold that up. Hold that up. Wait for attack just to be sure. And I was just, my brain was like, yes, this is the right decision. But I already know that, like, this ball is not going to count because I've scored 100,000 points when I started the ball with, like, 20 or something like that. So the tech came over. He saw what was going on. I pointed to the switch because you could actually see it being held down by the play field. It was just kind of skewed off to the side a little bit. And he just, like, turned the game off. Like, my flipper was still holding the ball up, and he just reached under and turned the game off. And he's like, let's go to the backup game. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
So we played Meteor, and I sucked on that.
Oh.
So yeah, that was my round 3. 4 points, and I tied for last.
my round 3 was the beginning of the end for day 1. I went into round 3 as the top seeded player in my group at 129, and I took 3 zeros and 1 win. My one win was on Cactus Jacks, which is a terrible early Gottlieb, and nobody in our group knew how to play it, myself included, and I got luckier than the rest of them. So that's what kept me. That's what kept me from just zeroing out that whole round. The rest of the games in my group were Faces, which is an EM from I want to say Sonic. I think it's one of the Spanish EM manufacturers. And
yeah, I think you're
right. just had some poor play there. Barracora, which is a game I really like. I've done really well on it in the past, and I just could not get anything done. And then AC/DC. Man, I've played so many games of AC/DC. This one, I finished with 5.6 million. Like, it's hard to score that low on AC/DC. But
it's hard to do that, but I have done that.
Yes, I've done it, and it is documented now. So I took another zero there. So I only took 3 points that round.
Well, we're gonna come back to this bank in round 8. So how about I save my comments for that bank until then?
Okay, very good.
All right. So after round 3, we had a very lovely beer and meatball break, which I had the buffalo chicken meatball things, which were pretty good, but the beer was good too.
I thought having a lunch break would have to, you know, knock me out of that terrible play that I had in round 3, and I was completely wrong about that. So, round 4.
That's okay. There's enough Yingling to make up for that. I think this was the weekend of Yingling. Like, everywhere I went, I was looking at the beer menu, and I'm like, I kind of like that this weekend. Like, that's all I wanted this week.
You know, if you're in Pennsylvania, and you want an inexpensive beer that isn't terrible, it's a good choice.
Yeah, it was, and like, it was very reasonable. It was always like a dollar less, or, you know, like one of the happy hour type of drinks. And it's good. Like, it's not Bud Light. And I know people like Bud Light, and there's, you know, everybody's got their taste, but I don't prefer Bud Light.
Right.
But when you have Yingling next to Bud Light on the, like, the happy hour menu, and it's like,
No choice.
Yes. No choice needed.
Yeah.
So round 4 was so you said round 3 was kind of the beginning of the end of your day 1. Round 4 was not really the beginning of the end, but kind of a dip for me. Let's Did you happen to play that Kiss LE?
No, I never played that one. I saw in the warm up that it had the lightning flippers on it, but I never actually played it.
Yes, it also has no ball save and like demons everywhere or something. It was insane.
Is it no ball save just at the start or like no ball save ever? I know it has like a compensation ball save, like when you lock a ball and it gets spit out of the head, there's like a, you know, like a 2 or 3 second ball save because it usually goes right down the middle.
So I don't know that anybody got that far.
Wow.
Yes. So you just talked about your game on AC/DC. Our game on Kiss, we had a 4-player game that I could probably plunge 5 balls on an EM slower, you know, than the game, that the 4-player game. It was just insane. Because people just stood up, they plunged, they hit the buttons a few times maybe, and then they just turned around and walked away. And it wasn't set up impossible. It was just all four of us did poorly because I played it the next day or one of the days, and I actually got some pretty good progress on it. And I was having fun. And I was like, this thing was murder ball yesterday. What is going on? So, yeah, 8-Ball Deluxe was super mean to me. Kiss LE, I got 3 points on. Casanova was kind of interesting. And then Lethal Weapon 3, I didn't hear okay very much because I didn't live very much on that game either.
So I had in my group 4, I had 3 games I had played before. So that was a very positive outlook going into group 4. I started with Countdown, which is the early solid state game in our group, and it's a game I know well. And I had 2 house balls to start off, and you know it's a solid state, so it's only a three ball game. 2 house balls to start off, and then one where I got nothing done. A Simpsons Pinball Party, which game I played a bunch, I know really well. I had a reasonable, not good score. I finished second to someone who had their all-time high on Simpsons.
Well, that's a good place to have it, I guess.
Yep, good for them. I played Dragon was the EM in our group, which is the game that if you're anywhere within 50 feet of it, you just hear bow,
bow,
bow, bow. Yeah, that's it, bow. And I read instructions in Bob Matthews' guide for Dragon, and I knew exactly what to do, and I could execute none of it.
And yeah, so it's because of those.
I lost
stupid
that
outlanes.
Yeah, and then we finished with Taxi. I love Taxi. I feel like I'm not terrible at Taxi, and I finished with under 1 million points and took 3rd place. So it was a 4-point round for me.
Yeah, so I got 4 as well. Down. So, but that round was actually pretty, you know, almost as even as it could have been, I guess. It was 7-7-6-4, and I got the 4. There was a gentleman from Europe, and it was one of the Scandinavian countries, I believe, but his name was Ollie. Very nice guy, very quiet. Not that he couldn't speak English. He was not fluent in English, but he was proficient enough to communicate, and he was a very, very interesting and nice guy. And this was the first time he was in one of my groups.
Oh.
So he was in one of my groups on the second day as well.
I think there was only one person the whole time that I played with more than once.
And then do you remember which rounds those were in? Like, were they one after the next, or?
Yeah, they were actually one after the rounds 9 and 10.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. So last year I said Sanjay Shah was in my first group, and he was in, last year, round 1, he was in my group, and then he was also in my group in round 5. And I thought that was kind of interesting that both the beginning and ending of the day, because he was,
yeah,
like he was A dedicated, you know, he was restricted to A, and so he was kind of sweating bullets trying to find points, and I'm just like, I'm a little too high, I think, right now. but that's okay because round five destroyed me and I ended up where I should have been. But either way, so but that was last year. So yes, Ollie, I played with him in more than one group, but so round five,
round the webpage, five, were you and I played against each other?
Yeah. I looked at my phone. I was like, and I think I was sitting either right next to you or one seat over when all this this stuff went live on the webpage. And I was like, hey Ben, let's go find our bank.
I was seated 536 and you were 537. We had the same record.
That was very funny.
Yeah. And you made the most of that round and I made the least.
Yeah, so round five went really well for me compared to most of my day so far. And like I said, that pretty much sealed my fate for day two.
Yeah.
So I played Stars several times at ZapCon this year. And I did better my one time at Pinburg on Stars than I did the entire time I played at ZapCon. And I played it over and over and over at ZapCon.
So I think at ZapCon this year, I think I had the top qualifier score on Stars. Like, I like Stars. I feel like I'm pretty good at it. I mean, as good as you can be at, an old Stern. And and fortunately, I got to play it a bunch of times in Pinburg, which we'll get to. Did. But I put up 22,000 in our group. Like, that is just terrible.
Yeah, and I enjoy Stars as well. Like, there's several of those classic Sterns that I really enjoy. But it's almost like saying, today I'm going to be better at random than you're going to be better at random. You know what I mean? It's like, that's just kind of the way everything felt on that one. But so those are the notes that I had on round five that, we were 536 and 537. I thought Space Station was a lot of fun. It's one of those no slingshot games. It's super hard to get under control because not all, but a lot of the defensive tactics that you can use to get it under control, and also you can't do post passes. Like your options from your skill set are just completely restricted, and that game plays so fast. But I had a lot of fun playing that game.
Yeah, it's a game that I usually enjoy, and I think I did okay. You just did a little bit better.
In that round, I was playing Space Station, and I wasn't completely running away with it, but I was running away with it enough that my brain said, "You have just completely screwed yourself for tomorrow." That, like, I don't remember if it was ball two or ball three, but I remember I was standing there playing Space Station, and all of a sudden I went from, "Hey, I'm winning this game," to my brain's like, You now have more points than you should have for this round. You are so screwed.
Well, I certainly didn't have that mental thought because I finished that round with 3 points.
Yes. And that was the
end of my decline.
But you know what? I'm gonna say that I get to take partial credit for everything that goes on beyond this point. Just for the record.
Sure, you could take that.
So that ends day one. So with the end of round five on day one, everybody is waiting for that last group to finish up and the scores to be entered so you can kind of see what division you've ended up in for day two, because day two is where you have to fight your way to the top 40 in order to make finals on day three. And so that's what Ben and I are going to chat about next. So until then, part two is upcoming, but party on.
Party on, Wayne!
Party on, Garth!
It's Wayne's World! Party time! Excellent!
And we're clear.